Welcome back to the Children's Hour. I'm Katie Stone. Today on the show, we're celebrating the end of school. And before the break, you heard Bowling for Soup with the Phineas and Ferb theme song. Today is going to be a great day. And it is going to be a great day because we've got a story from Bill Harley. This is Mrs. Ammons in the boys' room.
If you're a kid, you might think that your teacher doesn't know what to do when you're not there. You might think that teachers don't have anything to do all summer but wait for you to come back. Some kids think the teachers camp out in their classrooms all summer, waiting for Labor Day and the arrival of students when they can start living again. And that makes sense when you think about it. When school gets out in June, the teacher stands at the door, says goodbye, the kids run out the door, and they go home all summer. They come back at the end of the summer, and there the teacher is standing right where they left her. Hi, she says, come on in, I've been waiting for you. I thought that too, until the end of fourth grade. I found out at the end of fourth grade that teachers have a life without us. And I found out because Mrs. Marshall's dumb baby came early. Mrs. Marshall was my fourth grade teacher, and I really liked her. Mrs. Marshall was pregnant. She was supposed to say goodbye to us at the end of the school year, have the weekend off, deliver the baby on Monday, and be back in school the first week of September. But the dumb baby came early. And all of us in her fourth grade class arrived in school on Monday of the last week, a week that ended on Thursday at 11 o'clock, and we discovered that she was missing. Her baby had come. It was bad enough that Mrs. Marshall wasn't there because we all liked her. But what was even worse was who was there in her place. In Mrs. Marshall's place was Mrs. Ammons, the long-term substitute teacher of Washington Township. Mrs. Ammons was the SWAT team, the rapid deployment force, the crisis management contingent of the school system brought in when a class of kids had succeeded in reducing a teacher to tears and had driven her to early retirement. She only came in for long periods, and she only came in when they really needed her because everybody was afraid of her. There is no way to describe her but gaunt, humorless, and severe. She dressed in a simple gray skirt and white blouse. Her gray hair was yanked tight against her head. Her gray eyes peered out at the classroom like a hawk looking for some little animal to catch. Once, when I was in another class, we were all up running around the room. We were working on a project. Maybe we were making a little too much noise. I don't know. Maybe we were learning. But the teacher was in the room. Everything was okay. Mrs. Ammons was walking down the hallway. She heard all the noise. She opened up the door, stuck her head in the classroom, and said, "Is there a problem here?" We all scrambled to our seats, even the teacher. So you can imagine how upset I was when I walked into my fourth grade classroom and saw her. "What are you doing here?" I asked. "Mrs. Marshall had her baby," she said. "I'm your teacher for the rest of the week. Sit down and do your morning work. It's on the board." Now, it was miserable to have Mrs. Ammons at any time of year, but having her the last week of school was the worst thing that could possibly happen. The last week of school was the only one worth going to, as far as I was concerned, because the teachers had given up. It was hot. Standardized tests were finished. We could smell summer. So there was only one thing to do: have fun. We had extra recesses. We played hangman on the board in the middle of English. We had parties. We had class outside where you'd pull grass and throw it at your friends. But not with Mrs. Ammons. She called us in early from the first recess. Someone asked if we could have class outside. She said, "No, because you wouldn't learn anything. You just throw grass at your neighbor." Exactly, I thought. That was the whole point. "When can we have fun?" we'd ask. "Why can't we play games like everybody else?" She would say, "School ends on Thursday at 11 o'clock. After that, you can do whatever you want." Well, I got off on the wrong foot right away. I didn't mean to. I was misunderstood. The first time we lined up for lunch, she walked to the front of the line, turned the light of the classroom off, said, "Oh, that wasn't nearly good enough. Back to your seats, we'll have to try it again." We walked back to our seats and tried it again. She didn't like that either. Too noisy, too fast, not in order, again and again and again. Our lining up was eating into the lunch hour. Finally, about the seventh or eighth time we were headed back to our desks, I said, under my breath, just loud enough for her to hear, "Geez, I'm glad we're learning to do this." She misunderstood me. I meant to show her I understood how exasperated she was. We were idiots that we couldn't line up right. I looked at her. She folded her arms, turned her head towards me, lowered her gaze, and gave me a long, cold stare. After that, it didn't seem like I could say or do anything right. I was doomed. It was a miserable way to spend the last week of school, and there was only one place that you could escape, and that was only if you were a boy. 3 times a day, at 10:30, right before lunch, and at 1:30 in the afternoon, we had restroom break. We would file out the door of the classroom, down the hall, and the boys and girls would split up and go into the restrooms. And then the fun began, if you were a boy. We lined up at the 4 sinks and turned on the faucets. We soaked paper towels and threw them up on the ceiling. We flushed the urinals. Perry Lesh could do this amazing thing. He could take in one big squig of water, and for the rest of the 3 minutes we were in the bathroom, he would squirt little sprays out one after another. And we would count, 84, 85, 86, and he would never run out. Shortly after we went in, we would hear 3 sharp raps on the door. And from the other side, we would hear Mrs. Ammon's voice. "Time, boys. Time. Hurry up. Time. Time." But we were safe. Finally, we would walk out of the restroom with smiles on our faces. She would say, "No snickering." She wanted to know what went on, but she couldn't find out, because she wasn't a boy. That week, on the Monday afternoon excursion to the restroom, I made a discovery, which launched me into the pantheon of the most famous fourth graders that ever attended Delaware Trail Elementary School. In the bathroom, washing my hands, I looked back at the stalls and had a sudden inspiration. I walked into one of the nearest stalls, closed the door, stood on top of the seat, put my hands on top of the stall wall for balance, and poked my head over the top. "Look, you guys, look," I said. I reached out with one leg, holding onto the top of the stall, and with that free foot, pushed down on the plunger. The toilet roared and swirled. I looked at my friends, rolled my eyes, and said, "Ah!" and slowly sank down to my knees, my head disappearing behind the stall wall. There was a moment of silence, and then this huge, spontaneous outbreak of applause and cheering. It looked exactly like I had been swallowed by the toilet. I didn't know exactly what it looked like, but it must have been magnificent, because immediately every boy in the restroom lined up for the stall and saying, "Oh, watch me. No, no, watch this one. No, no, I can do it. I can do it. I can do it." And one by one, whoosh, whoosh, they all got sucked up by the toilet. Finally, Mrs. Ammon's knocking was so persistent we had to leave with huge grins. "No snickering," she said. We could hardly wait for restroom break. We asked for extra ones. The girls in our class couldn't understand it, and probably more than one began to really wonder if there was something seriously, seriously wrong with boys. I am proud to say that of all the boys in that class, I was the best, the absolute best, at getting sucked up by the toilet. You can put it on my grave. It was the only bright spot in a horrible week. Other kids in other classes got extra recesses. Mrs. Ammons discovered some old reading books in some long-forgotten closet in the school, handed them out, and had us read these stupid stories and answer the stupid questions. One of them was Jimmy's Birthday Surprise, about a kid who was excited because he got dress shoes for his birthday. Who could get excited about that? We had to answer the question in full sentences. The question asked, "What was Jimmy's birthday surprise?" And if you wrote, "Dumb dress shoes," Mrs. Ammons made you do the whole thing over and write, "Jimmy's birthday surprise was new dress shoes." "Why can't we have any fun?" we'd ask. She'd answer, "School ends at 11 o'clock on Thursday. Then you can have fun." Everybody else had parties. We begged and pleaded. Mrs. Ammons finally said, "All right, we'll play a game." "Oh, great," said, "we're going to do. What kind of game are we going to play?" "Math relay races," she said. "Oh, math relay races." In math relay races, she would write a bunch of problems up on the board. The first person in each row would go up to the board and do the first problem, finish it, go back, touch the person behind them in their row, and that person would go up and do the next problem. The only fun part was trying to trip the kids in the other rows as they ran back to their seats. After the second time somebody tripped, Mrs. Ammon said, "All right, no tripping. Everyone must walk to the board and back." "What's the point?" I asked. She glared at me again and shook her head back and forth as if she were reaching the end of her rope. All week long, we wandered through the purgatory of Mrs. Ammon's teaching until finally we got to Thursday, less than half a day to freedom. Mrs. Ammons gave us spelling words. She had us write a paper about what we liked about the year. And then, somewhere around 10 o'clock, or a little later, all the boys looked at each other. We realized we were still going to get one more bathroom break. At 10:30, Mrs. Ammons made no sign there would be a bathroom break. Finally, at 10:40, one of the boys raised his hand. "Mrs. Ammons, do we have a restroom break?" "No," she said. "School ends in half an hour." But what if you have to go?" somebody asked. "Oh, surely," she said. "You don't have to go. You can wait." "No, no, no," all the boys said. "We gotta go. We gotta go." I don't know why she gave in, but she did. "All right," she said. "This is silly. Everybody line up." We lined up. We were good at it. We'd had a week of practice. Down the hallways to the restroom, Mrs. Ammons muttering to herself, the girls wondering what was wrong with us. Mrs. Ammons stood at the door of the restroom and watched us file in. Inside the boys' restroom, the party began. The faucets went on, thumbs stuck underneath them, the urinals flushed, paper towels pulled out and soaked, turned into weapons. It was a water park. And of course, one by one, we lined up, went into the stall, and got sucked in by the toilet. "Watch this! Watch this! It was an Olympic rating system. 6.2, 6.4, 6.5, artistic merit, 6.8. We were wild with abandon. School was almost over. Mrs. Ammons rapped on the door. "Time, boys, time. You guys," they said, you guys, one more, just watch. I ran into the stall, climbed on the seat. I hung over the edge of the stall. "You guys, watch." I reached out for the plunger with my foot. Now, there had been a lot of activity on that seat in the last 3 minutes. Every time it had flushed a little water, it spurted up a little bit onto the seat, and it was wet. I guess it was a little slippery, too. As I pushed down on the plunger, I felt my foot beginning to slip off the seat, headed towards, well, the sewer system. I pulled my other foot off the plunger and tried to find the seat with it, but that foot slipped and both feet were gone, and in I went. I screamed, "Ah!" On the other side of the wall as the toilet swirled, the bathroom had gone quiet. I assumed this was because it was so realistic. After all, I really was being sucked up by the toilet. Though both feet were in the toilet, I realized I was going to be okay. I wouldn't fit down in there. I was trying to get out, leaning against the stall for balance and saying, "I'm okay, guys, I'm okay." The door to the stall opened. I turned and said, "I'm okay." And there she was, Mrs. Ammons, in the boys' bathroom. How did she get in there? Was that legal? Could she do that? Wasn't there some rule? She folded her arms, shook her head slowly, and hissed, "What do you think you're doing?" What could I say? I said, "I'm stuck in the toilet." Well, she got me unstuck fast. We left a trail of water down the hallway for the custodian to clean up sometime that summer. The whole way down the hall, she didn't finish a sentence. "Of all the things I have never, that just, you think if I'm, I, all my years of teaching, this is, if in my day, this is the last." My arm was locked in her grip. She dragged me down the hall to the office. We stood at the office counter. She was muttering and spluttering, "Where is Mr. Oliver?" She was asking for the vice principal in charge of discipline. The secretary jumped up from what she was doing. She was terrified, and Mrs. Ammons, too. "I don't know," the secretary said. "He's in some other part of the building." "Well, you call him down here right now. You, right now." The secretary hopped to the intercom and called for the vice principal. Mrs. Ammons held onto my arm, pinching it tighter, still muttering to herself and shaking her head. Everybody else was getting ready to be free, and I was going to be hung up in the vice principal's closet, expelled for life, sent to Siberia. "Where is he?" Mrs. Ammons asked. He's coming," the secretary said. I looked down the hall, and I saw Mr. Oliver coming from the primary wing, trundling down the hall. "Oh, I'm going to die," Mrs. Ammons had seen him too, and she turned me around to face him. I saw the serious look on Mr. Oliver's face. He came closer and closer, and then, when he was about 20 feet away, it happened. The bell rang. The last long, long bell of school rang, and summer had begun. The doors, the classrooms were flung open. Hundreds, thousands of children, free, poured into the hall, out the main door, by the office, onto the pavement, headed to the buses, their arms waving, their voices chanting, raised in joy, papers being scattered everywhere. And I felt it too, like a great surge of joy and life and hope calling to something deep inside of me. I felt myself pulled too. I looked up at Mrs. Ammons. She looked at me, and I saw something in her eyes. I couldn't quite make out what it was. Some doubt, some hesitation, some question. I felt her grip loosen for a moment. And I ran, like the wind. Or maybe I was just pulled by the mass of humanity that was pouring out of the door, out the door, down the walk, up the steps of the bus, all the way to the back of the bus. Other fourth graders from my class came on the bus and saw me. What happened, they asked. I got away, I said. They cheered and yelled. We looked out the window for Mr. Oliver or Mrs. Ammons or the whole police force to bust out of the school and get me. But the bus doors closed. The bus shifted into gear, up the driveway, onto the street. I was free. Free at last. Free at last. Great God Almighty. Free at last. I had never felt so free before. I've never felt so free again. I got home and came in the house, carefully. How was school? My mom asked. Fine, I said. Good, she said. Phew, I thought. She hadn't heard. I waited for a call from the school, but it didn't come. In the neighborhood, I was a hero. I had escaped from Mrs. Ammons, the only one to ever do so. And I took all the praise, but I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if I had gotten away or she had let me go, because I remembered that look in her eyes, and I wondered what it meant. I found out. Somewhere halfway through the summer, on the way home from the pool at the Y, I talked my mom into stopping and letting me get an ice cream cone. As I stood in line there in the hot sun, line was four or five people deep, with a big guy in front of me, I heard a familiar voice at the window ordering, "I'd like a small vanilla cone." It was she. I leaned over and looked around the guy in front of me. There she was, Mrs. Ammons, outside of school. She was wearing a white camp shirt and salmon-colored Bermuda shorts she would never have worn in school. She took the cone and turned to walk back down the line. I stood behind the guy in front of me, hoping she wouldn't notice. But she did. She stopped in front of me and looked at me with those steely eyes. "Hello, William," she said.
"Hi, Mrs. Ammons."
"Are you having a good summer?"
"Uh-huh."
And then she licked her cone, looked at me evenly, and said, "I know you were sick of me. But, William, not as sick as I was of you." So, when you say goodbye to your teachers at the end of the school year and wonder how they're going to do without you, don't worry about a thing. They're gonna be just fine.
That's Bill Harley from Battle of the Mad Scientists. Today we're celebrating the end of the school year.
You're listening to the Children's Hour. Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Many thanks to the Outpost Performance Space for hosting the Children's Hour. The Children's Hour is supported by United Way of North Central New Mexico. Support for the Children's Hour provided by New Mexico Arts, a division of the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs, and by the National Endowment for the Arts. Support for the Children's Hour provided by the City of Albuquerque Cultural Services Department and the Urban Enhancement Trust Fund.